Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
You know, 'twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the jubjub bird and shun the frumous brandersnatch. This is all off the top of my head. He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the maxim foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree and sought a while and thought.
All right, get ready. Get ready, cinematic hot take. It is fine.
It's
fine.
It's not. I mean, I don't want to be the John in this episode, but I'm going to have to. Like, this is just a lifeless mess.
I'll go you one further. It's as good as most of his movies.
That's just because he should have stopped making movies in the year 2000.
Yeah. I mean, he kept going, but I would say it's as good as... It's fine as Mars Attacks. I enjoyed it as much as Mars Attacks at this point.
Oh, boy. That is... Like, Mars Attacks had life and was fun. This is just a dreary... Like, it's like he forgot that he's depressing and goth for fun purposes and just made everything brown. Like, this is like a stick of a movie. It's just a brown stick of a sticky... Ugh.
I think it's right in line with a lot of his other output in terms of like the look and the colors of it. Because even I think he got a little bit away from the complete just Nightmare Before Christmas kind of palette. But I mean, even Edward Scissorhands is super colorful, and you know, like Big Fish, super colorful.
No, that's.
I think this has that, but it also is mixing with his. Hot Topic Molgoth stuff.
No, see, that's where you're wrong. It's not as Hot Topic Molgoth stuff. This is some weird, like, so Hot Topic Molgoth is black, maybe some purple, silver. This is like, you know, there's like a death metal band that's got brown in their logo. And it's just like, ugh, it just doesn't look right. Like, it looks, it's supposed to be unreadable text in white. That's what I expect from you. And this is just, like, this has got like a burnt umber tone to it that it just... And I get what he's trying to make it like this epic thing of like, well, Wonderland fell after Alice left the first time and everything's burnt and looks shitty, where it's like, it's got the same lens as if the Chiron at the bottom said Auschwitz 1945. Like, it's got
okay,
this,
that's
like,
a little much.
But it's got this like, okay, gravitas depressing lens where it's like, no, you're supposed to be Gillib through the gum gum tree and Flibberty Wibbits and fun. But this is just stark, gross. Like, it's like it needs a, this movie needs a bath.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess to me that's so much of Tim Burton's style is that, like, that more sort of gross, dark kind of stuff.
The gross kind of brown is what I like. I mean, I guess you're talking about later Tim Burton, or I mean, it's not later anymore.
I just think like all the, like, so much of the character designs and stuff seem very Tim Burton-y.
See, I think the Mad Hatter is like something Tim Burton wouldn't have done until his later career. That it's, there's too much.
I think he would have been a little, he certainly would have looked less like Johnny Depp, I think, in his early career.
But I think there would have been a little bit more of
the moment. And actually I did enjoy this, where the, it's like right after you first meet the Mad Hatter and he's walking with Alice somewhere and he starts like going off on one of his all of a sudden I'm Scottish moments.
Yeah.
And like he turns and says something to her. It's like, boy, this guy does not seem safe or pleasant at all, which was, admittedly, like, I've never been a fan of Alice in Wonderland. I've always found it kind of creepy and off-putting. I think this sort of maximizes that tone a little bit. So, but like, that moment did. But I think the movie kind of doesn't keep up that kind of
tension. Yeah, so I think if this movie was made by what I like to call Tim Burton, you know, like, back when he, like, made good Tim Burton movies, is the Mad Hatter would have looked like Vincent, or all, you know how he had that one character that was in every movie, the kind of Wayne goth big-eyed with like lots of lines underneath it. And that would, you know, that's the Hot Topic kind of, that's what I'm looking for. Come on, John, it's World Goth Day. We're recording this. Like,
I know, but that's kind of Johnny. I mean, it was Johnny Depp at one point. And I do think, I do agree that there's a certain amount of, in his career, in both their careers, Tim Burton and Johnny Depp just kind of went, yeah, this is working.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bajillionaire and I have, you know, Tim Burton's case, like I have kids and whatever, like, yeah, I've done what I need to do. I'm happy to just get the paycheck.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak porn, but that's certainly how it feels.
No. But, I think you're right. It just sucks. Cause I was a big Alice in Wonderland fan, like when I was younger. And, this is
a kid's movie where a person crosses a moat using severed heads as rocks. And it's just not even commented upon.
Yeah, which, by the way,
I think that's awesome. And I think that's kind of a Burton-y thing.
Yeah. Also, the most English part of this movie. Like, oh, do pardon me, local people of this town. I'm going to step on your faces as I take over your kingdom.
This movie is just full of just the worst kind of Britishness.
No, this movie.
And I don't mean like Remainers or Leavers. I mean, but just the, like, what we think British people are, like... I heard about Douglas Adams once, and I think he's hilarious, and this is how all British people should act. You know what I mean? Like that kind of whimsical and weird, but it doesn't have the bitingness to it, or the, you know, it's all just like silly words.
Yeah. The silly words thing is, so just to start the film off, the thing that killed me to begin with is, how on the fucking nose the, well, I'm not very normal, Alice is. It is, yes. It is subtext with a capital S, capital U, capital B, underlined in Comic Sans, and then in parentheses, hey, check it out, there's subtext here with an arrow. Like, it says it like six fucking times in an opening thing of like, oh, I might be a little bit weird. Oh, did I say that part out loud? It's supposed to be, oh, fuck, shut your dumb face. That's not a character. That's a Wayne Heroine. That's girl Jim Carroll.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is,
this movie stunk.
I mean, that's the work of screenwriter Linda Wolverton. You know, I don't know how much Burton had to do with it, but she's the one listed. But she has done a lot of Disney films and stage musicals. And when this thing first started, I was trying to get my footing at first, because I guess I sort of just expected it to be just a retelling of Alice in Wonderland. Then I started thinking about, is this like the first one of, does this count as the first one of Disney's live, quote unquote, live action remakes, where they take one of their animated properties and make it awful? And it's not. It is its sort of its own thing, for good or ill. But it isn't just, hey, what if Lion King had real lions? But it does start with this almost like Jane Austen-y thing, a woman coming into bloom and being forced through society to marry a guy that she doesn't want to marry.
Yeah. And that guy is so stereotypically like ugly English that it's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a reoccurring thing in movies. And I was noticing this where it's like, if you want to show that someone is gross or sucks, cut to them like blowing their nose and then looking at it. I feel like, yes, that's a thing I've seen a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Just this whole first part is super awkward. There's actually like, I think the third act, I was kind of like into it. Not into it. I was like, all right, this is fine. But like this first part, I think it took me a while to recover from, because it's just, this is, doesn't do a great job of introducing the story we're about to tell. Everything's like super on the nose, you know, with the like, yes, you know, I'm not very, and then, oh, of course it's like a codfish. Oh, look how wacky I am. Oh, yeah. How dare you? Oh, look, she said a thing that wasn't, it's just like this comedy of manners kind of jokiness. I think, I don't know, maybe it's just like, it doesn't work in modern times, but it also, there's no, the actress, who plays Alice? Do you know?
Like Mia Wachowski or something.
Yeah. I think it's her. Not a comedic performance from her.
No, and in fact, apparently she was hired for her gravitas.
Yeah. I was looking at some of the behind the scenes stuff, and I think I understand why this movie didn't work for me. Tim Burton said he doesn't like Alice in Wonderland. He always found it annoying. That it was just a sequence of vignettes that were made to be funny and aren't, which is literally how the book is written. Like, that's the point of it.
It's so weird, because so much, it, to me anyway, and you know, real goths, yell at me if you want to, but the whole like mall goth, that kind of like twisted Alice in Wonderland thing, so much of that to me came from the Tim Burton aesthetic. And I don't know which one came first, the you know, chicken or the egg kind of thing, but I didn't start seeing that shit till I saw Tim Burton movies.
I think they're unrelated only because, Maybe not. It comes from, it predates Tim Burton, not in the goth way, but the psychedelia hooked on to Alice in Wonderland.
That I get. I'm just saying the more dark gothy kind of thing.
Well, I mean, the book is kind of dark if you read it, like both books. Like sure. there is a undertone of like, oh, this isn't okay. But I think
it was written by a preterist, so that's, you know.
Oh, is that true?
I know he's
a mathematician, which I mean that goes hand in hand. Yeah.
It's questioned. I'll say that.
Pederast, better at math, same thing.
Same exact thing.
That's why, you know, if you run those through Kabbalah, they're exactly the same. No, I didn't know that about Lewis Carroll. No, it's kind of dark and like, I think it's just a natural progression from like the trippy, whoever did that Ask Alice song. Who's the one with the lady that choked on a ham sandwich? Jefferson Airplane.
That's Mama Cass, and that's not how she died, but.
No, I know, but is that the lady I'm talking about?
No.
Oh.
You're talking about Grace Slick.
Oh, am I? Okay, yeah, I was totally wrong. I know that wasn't how she died, but like, I knew that if I said that, you'd know the person I was talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, she was killed by the CIA. Same as Jimi Hendrix. No, I think it's just like a natural progression for the drug culture to go into the goth culture. Like it's, you know, just kind of the next thing. But because that book is fucking weird. I think it would have gotten weird even without Tim Burton. But the, the whole beginning kind of her not being comic, it sets the movie off on this uncomfortable tone. And I think it's because Tim Burton doesn't like the source material and tried to turn it into something else. And it's like, there's a reason this is an enduring classic. And you're trying to make a sequel stroke adaptation of a classic by completely changing its bones. And I think that's a bad idea. Like generally it's like, all right, I want to do Romeo and Juliet, but they hate each other. Well, I mean, sort of, I mean, there's a reason we still read that play. There's a reason Lewis Carroll's still famous.
I think he gets around that by not caring about Alice at all. And then just having her kind of, while being the star, also just be a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't really do much other than like, have other people kind of react to her.
I mean, I would posit that the Mad Hatter is the lead character of this piece. And God bless Johnny Depp, because he is trying.
Yes.
He wants this to be a good movie, and I don't blame any of it on him. He's there. He was showing up. He had his game hat on, and I've got nothing against him. Some of the casting of the kind of second and tertiary people I question a little bit, even though some of them I quite like.
I forgot that Crispin Glover was in this.
Crispin Glover is so good in this. And by the way,
that made me excited. Yeah.
Crispin Glover looking like a fucking snack in this.
Yeah. And I didn't realize until well into that his character had been around for a while that like his body is CG.
Yeah.
He's got like super spindly legs. And so I was just like, yeah, it's Crispin Glover.
Didn't pick up on that until the very end. Yeah. Yeah. But boy, his face is looking nice. Like, yeah, Crispin Glover is looking nice.
Like little axe jaw kind of thing.
Yeah.
But some Disney movie.
And I'm going to say,
it's just bizarre.
Well, I mean, you know, ladies want to fuck that animated fox. Like Disney has a long history of having, you know, weird sex symbols in it.
It's less the sexy part and more the Crispin Glover part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Crispin Glover, I'm saying, is an animated fox. It's a 1-to-1.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Some of the casting choices, and I think it's just like the lack of energy in it. And you know I'm a huge Stephen Fry fan. Stephen Fry is like my number one celebrity crush in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
He's a terrible Cheshire Cat.
I agree.
There's no energy in that part.
At first when I realized it was him, I'm like, oh, cool. And then there's just not much to it.
And then Alan Rickman, he wasn't good either. And it's not his fault. It's just you casted a bunch of English, slow-speaking, deep-voiced guys for all the, and the other dog thing or whatever, like every talking part is mm-hmm. the same indistinguishable English actor. And it's just, it was like geography class. It was just fucking Boresville.
Yeah. No, it all kind of is the same voice. And I think like, there's all these underlying things that they don't really pick up on in terms of her, like you see all the stuff at the beginning that's, you could use to set up for like, oh, when she actually goes into Wonderland, or as they call it, Underland in this one, that like, oh no, she actually just hit her head and this is like the real life thing, like the Wizard of Oz kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything with that. She's still convinced it's a dream, but she never goes like, oh, as you know, you're this person. It's just like, oh no, remember when I said I was 5 and I had this dream? That's why that's it.
Well, what's,
and
that's, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and the same thing with kind of the underlying, her whole arc, which is this sort of like supposed to be this feminist thing of like, I don't know who I am and society wants me to be this way, but I'm not comfortable with that. And then it's just kind of like, then she's passed around a whole bunch and by different CG weirdos. And then she goes, yeah, no, I'm me. And that's fine. I'm going to go start some opium wars in China.
Yeah. But which we'll get to it. The Wizard of Oz comparison is apt for opposition. Wizard of Oz has us caring about Dorothy well before she gets to, does she go to Oz? Oh, yeah, the Emerald City is the main place. Oz is the whole land. Before she gets to Oz, like, we care about Dorothy. Like, Somewhere of the Rainbow is, that happens before she gets to Oz, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, like, the most famous part of this. In this movie, it's a vaguely awkward girl, inexplicably, even though she's probably the most attractive human that's ever been made. Oh, but I'm awkward because my dad was slightly weird and I'm very wealthy. It's just,
but that is some Tim Burton. That's some nice, ooh, that's the classico Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Like awkward weirdo that's also like gorgeous.
Yeah, but this was like especially so. Just like, what the, I mean, because it's like, she has the same make and model of the sexy Martian from Mars Attacks. Where her whole character is, I'm very attractive.
Yeah. We can get in how clearly that was Anne Hathaway was supposed to be that person.
Yeah, and I think Anne Hathaway would have been so much better because you need someone. Because yeah, he says he hired her for gravitas, and that's not what you need from Alice.
From Alice, yeah. That's the whole point.
You need whimsy. You need childlike wonderment. you need humor. You don't need a heroin cheek, anemic face, hot lady. Like it's like she should be in fucking Zoolander.
I watched this, and reading a little bit about it, I was reminded of the Jan Svankmajer Alice movie. Which Jan Svankmajer is this, I think he's Czech. And he
I love that one.
He's a big stop motion guy. Fuck, that's the movie you need the gravitas for, because that is some grim shit. You think this is grim?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Jan Svankmajer makes Lars von Trier look like Hayao Miyazaki.
Hail, babe.
he makes Worker and Parasite look like the frickin' Muppet Babies, Chachi.
Yeah,
It's grim. It's just Alice going to different grimy rooms with a stop motion taxidermied rabbit with bug eyes.
Yeah, that movie is incredible. If anybody out there wants to watch a good version of Alice, I don't even know good is. It's like
it's certainly a vision. It's certainly a singular vision.
It's really like artsy kind of. I keep wanting to say it's not. The reason I didn't go with your bit is because I couldn't think of the guy who's not a Werner von Braun. That's the Nazi rocket scientist. who's the evil Nazi? The guy that worked with Klaus Kinski.
Werner Herzog. Brought over in Project Paperclip.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I had Werner von Braun stuck in my head, and I wanted to go with your Dennis Miller. I'm like, no, Werner von Braun is definitely not who. But that other Alice movie is so fucking dark and weird, and it's
so weird.
And the Alice in this would be perfect for that because she's got weird, like she seems Czech or Polish or something. Like she's got that. She's got like a.
She seems like one of them types.
Well, I mean, her last name is very like kind of, Polska area, but, but she's got that kind of like wide eyed kind of, concrete surrealist. Like, I mean, it would work perfectly, but
she's got a brutalist face.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. But in this movie you need, but Anne Hathaway would have been perfect for the lead. And I guess she turned it down, but like maybe not even perfect. Anne Hathaway has a lot to her. So she's one of those people that, I forget what it's called, you know that thing where if an actor just doesn't make a face and then you put an emotion on the bottom of the screen, you see the emotion in them?
Yeah. We talked about it. The Kuleshov method.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway, like, has that kind of, like, face and
well, she's got a very expressive face. This person is just...
No, but Hathaway also has that other thing, that kind of... You can put things on her really easily. And I think she's a good actress, too. But, like, beyond that, she also has that kind of... I'm going to be pretentious. Fuck it. That shouldn't say qual kind of thing that like you can't, but it's like she has it. And boy, I would have like that would have made this movie 30% better having like a strong lead. Because I think this front part it's not inexpertly made. It's just there's no one to give a shit about. Like the mother figure or whoever the fuck that was walking around has no personality. Yeah. Well, all of the evil English people have no personality other than like, I've got a big jaw and I should be from a Monty Python sketch. Like there's nothing there. So if you had somebody with, you know, charisma, boy, like fucking put the Rock there. Like I'd be like, yeah.
But even like, yeah, there's this tiny little moment in the beginning where, and I do like the way this is shot, by the way. I do think it looks interesting, like the particularly the shot when they're all gathered at the gazebo for the gross guy to propose to her. Just the shot of them all lined up and with the hedges on the side. I like the way that looks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like there's this little aside with apparently it's her brother-in-law who's like smooching on some other lady. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they don't do anything with that.
And it carries no weight. And also she doesn't fucking drop the dime later where.
Right.
Cool.
I think it's just supposed to be, boy, she doesn't fit into this world. And if she marries this guy, well, he's, you know, that's probably going to happen. This doesn't seem right. But I feel like there's probably, yeah, a better way to do that. But
I really just think it's the actress. Like, and it's not even like, it's not her fault. Like, she just, they chose the, there's a lot of movies that lady would be really good in. Because there's parts that like when she's in, I mean, we'll get to it later. But when she's in the armor at the end, it's like, oh, I'm now picturing a lot of movies that you'd be delightful in. This is not one of them, but you've got a great look. You have a certain, like, it's not like she's bad at acting. It's just, she's not
right.
She's miscast.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of sucks because I like to blame her because I like blaming pretty people for all my problems. Sure. It's just, they hired the wrong person.
I hear about it from you a lot.
Yeah. I hear about it from you a lot. And I'm sorry that I look like this. There's a couple lines I did like in the beginning. Well, no, that's true. There's one line, but, I did like for the comedy of manners kind of thing. And again, better actress, but when in doubt, remain silent, which is such a like, oh, hop, hop, cheerio. Just it's the English way. When in doubt, remain silent, you know, think back, you know, just lean on your back and think of England.
Yeah. I mean, that was like the first like 15 minutes of the movie. Cause you also have like the flashback with her dad, which I, again, was sort of this, that was supposed to be the offshoot of her original adventure. Something like that, because she references seeing a blue caterpillar.
Yeah.
Whoa, crazy. And sort of instill that she's got this adventurous spirit that she gets from her dad, which for a movie about a woman coming into her own, to be like, yes, I'm just like my dad, is a little bit weird of a message.
Yeah, and it's also weird that you don't establish the mother as having much personality, where it's...
Yeah.
Like, you would think that the dad being so adventurous, like the mom would be kind of quirky or interesting, but the mom is just like a staid... kind of English woman. There's just a lot of, not even mixed messaging, it's not saying anything. So it's just kind of like, I just want to hurry up.
It's just giving you these wafts of like, you get it, right?
Yeah.
You get like, yeah, it's, we've all seen this crap. Just let's move along.
Though I would say I would watch an entire movie about Aunt Imogen.
Yes.
Aunt Imogen it's called Grey Gardens, but like Aunt Imogen is great. And that's the tall lady from Harry Potter.
There's a few Harry Potter alum.
There's a lot. Alan Rickman, the guy that plays Peter Pettigrew, which I don't know his name. Like, yeah, there's quite a few.
Is that the rat dude?
The rat dude plays the hound dog.
Plays the hound dog. And then I think the Dolores Umbridge.
Dolores Umbridge is in this, yeah.
Yeah, she plays the flowers, which is, like, that actress is actually really good, and I feel bad that I'm just referencing her as a Harry Potter person.
Well, you know, the thing is...
It's like when Christopher Lee died. It's like, Christopher Lee from Star Wars. It's like, oh, man.
Like, oh, wow. I would have said Lord of the Rings, but yeah, I guess it wasn't Star Wars. Yeah. I mean, even that is terrible because that's 60 years into a storied career. And I'm like, yeah, remember he's that guy with the ball that talks to the eyeball. Yeah. But yeah, Umbridge is, I don't like the Harry Potter movies, but that lady is so hateable in that part. And I mean that in like the best way. Oh boy, no one has ever embodied a character better than her. Like that is so good. Like she's, oh boy.
Imelda Staunton. Is the actress.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. She's been in several things that are much better than Harry Potter.
Because his movies are somewhere between dog shit and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she decides not to marry the guy, sort of, because she keeps seeing the rabbit in the waistcoat and falls down the hole to get to Underland/Wonderland. And I don't know if it's right here, but continuing the trend of trying to figure out the Tim Burton things. And I think this is one of those, that car that's in all of the
Sam Raimi
movies.
I like how I was able to just know that.
Yeah.
Ask, I feel good about myself.
I'm glad because I was never going to come up with it. I'm like, my brain is falling apart. I couldn't think of Johnny Depp last night, but I was looking at him. I'm like, that guy. I mean, to be fair, I wasn't hitting pause or anything. It was just, I was having a moment. And then I was like, I was just going with how dumb I am. But anyway, is Crooked Door again in this movie? That slanty door. I think that might be in every Tim Burton movie.
Dude loves slanty doors.
But I mean, like, I think it might be like a thing, like as a joke, like almost like a Wilhelm Scream kind of thing of like he sneaks a slanted door into every movie, which, by the way, is a better actor than the lead.
There is I've known some people that have worked on movie shot here in Portland. And with some people, there is a thing that they call the camera weasel. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I believe it is like a stuffed animal of a weasel. These people that are like grips and whatever will try to sneak into scenes. And there's several movies that they've done that they've gotten it in there. They're like, it's ended up making it into the final cut. And I'm probably, validating or breaking. What's the
Omerica? Kayfabe.
Yeah. By saying it, but like, it's not a thing that they ever brought. It's like, yeah, hey, we did it. It's just done.
Wait, what did you say? Breaking what? Omerta?
Omerta, isn't that what it is?
I don't know. I have no idea what the fuck that is.
Come on, you're Italian and from Jersey.
Oh, it's like...
I see. You don't know what it is.
I don't.
I get it.
Okay, I will tell you
you're
this...
You're clear. I'm winking at you.
I know. I'm going to put this on the table right now, because I don't know if I've ever made this very clear before on the show. I don't find gangster things good. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like The Godfather particularly. Like, I recognize it as being a very well-made movie. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but like, I have no interest in watching it. Like,
there is such a thing as protesting too much. I'm just going to say that.
Well, no, it's not like, I don't find it interesting. So like any of that, like, I can't do the accent very well, but like the, what's it? Gumad, like that whole, like, I don't, it's just gross. you hear that Italians, your whole culture is gross.
Yes, I believe you.
Yeah. No, I don't know much about the whole, I think it is because I grew up in Jersey. It's like, I don't know. I found it irritating because everybody's into it. It's like that, like, where you don't want to like your local sports team because all those shitheads that you grew up near like them. Yeah. Like, it's that same thing where, like, everybody's like, forget about it. So I'm like, yeah, I will forget about it. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And I think Nebraska football has about as many bodies on it as the Mafia. So I think it's equal.
Yeah. John, you're from Nebraska.
I'm going to throw that out there based on absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I forgot you were from Nebraska. I was going to say Iowa.
But yeah, no. Oh, how dare you?
There's a big rivalry between the two useless states.
They're different.
I don't even know where Iowa is.
Yeah. Say what?
I don't even know where Iowa is. I'm not even sure that's
it's next to Nebraska.
Oh, that is the one. I get Iowa, and what's the one next to us? Idaho.
Yeah.
I get Idaho and Iowa confused.
It's not. It's really not that hard.
Well, they're both start and end with a vowel.
If I can figure out New Hampshire and Vermont. You can figure out these giant states.
But, okay, one, there's no one in either of them. Two, New Hampshire to Vermont, just New Hampshire to Vermont, they're the same thing. I grew up there. You don't have to confuse. Like, I'm not so precious like your fucking shitbag corn belt that you think any of those fucking places are any different. You're from Kansas, asshole.
Oh, how dare you.
Kansas, no, I'm sure with your Kansas, it's like the worst place in the country. It's like Florida, terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad.
All right, so anyway, back to this dumb fucking movie. Yeah, she goes to Wonderland. It's not looking so good. The walls are, got some, could use a coat of paint.
Looking all Stankmeyer down there.
I don't know. You say something.
It looks like a Tim Burton movie.
No, but it doesn't. It looks like a Tim Burton movie that at some point starts to be it. So in the beginning of, like, let's say Edward Scissorhands, it's a dark industrial thing that's happy and fun because they're actually making cookies. And then it becomes really down and covered in dirt and dust because the father dies. Right.
Yeah.
The next thing that happens, it gets upbeat and pastel and weird, and he makes animals and the blah, blah, blah. This is, it starts dull, it gets duller and darker, and then it continues duller and darker, and then at no point does it get happy and fun. It's like Tim Burton forgot his aesthetic actually was supposed to be counteracted with the action. The point of the dark thing is that it's upbeat and fun.
His whole thing, like, this just justifies that aesthetic. And particularly, like, him not liking this, the story, it makes sense that this is like, well, Because he said, like, it's not a sequel to an existing version or whatever. It's his own thing. Is that he wants to do the beat up Wonderland, and he needs a reason to do it. And so by having it fall because she's forgotten, even like if they took the route of, you know, she's forgotten her childlike innocence, and that brings Wonderland back, like, which I know they've done in other movies, but that would be a little bit more interesting than just things suck.
But things don't get better is the problem. Like, there's no...
Changes don't happen overnight, yeah, you know?
But Tim Burton forgot why he does Tim Burton stuff. Like, he missed his own point, and it's so frustrating because...
Yeah, I don't think so. I think this is perfectly in line with the Tim Burton stuff.
No, it's not, because...
where it needs to be, like the queen of...
Of course. Name a Tim Hearts. Burton movie that's this dark through the whole movie. It doesn't exist.
Nightmare Before Christmas is pretty dark.
Nightmare Before Christmas is a fucking upbeat musical. And he didn't direct it.
But it still looks that way.
No, I'm not talking about look. I'm saying tone. This is a bummer the whole way.
Yeah, see, I didn't. I wasn't bummed out the whole way. I found it perfectly charming for the first, like, two-thirds of the movie.
Seriously, falling out of English aristocracy into a burnt-down wilderness that used to be better. Like, basically falling into the Trump administration.
But I thought the characters were cute. And charming enough. I love the Dormouse. That was my favorite character.
The Dormouse is the only one that has any kind of life in it. But, like, the Hatter is kind of gross and too real, so it's, like, a little pederasty. Like, I mean, I guess she's an adult now, but either way.
I enjoyed that kind of creepiness from him at the beginning. But then when he just kind of becomes...
Yeah, I just...
It's less fun.
The Wonderland stuff in better Tim Burton movies would last a little while and then get to be fun. And I don't think it ever gets to be fun in this.
Like, I think it's fun enough. I didn't expect like super bright whimsy, which honestly, like the what I saw in the advertising, I thought was going to be a bit more of that. I thought it was going to be a bit more like how the Wonka movie ended up being. And maybe I was just kind of glad that wasn't the case.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the Wonka movie would do, like, if you know, the Wonka movie is fucking terrible too. I was going to say at least had some upbeat moments.
There's the Platoon flashback where Johnny Depp is the Mad Hatter, like, is hanging out with the White Queen, and then, like, the Red Queen attacks and the Queen of Hearts attacks and blows everything up. And that's how he goes crazy, I guess. I think that's a super dour point in the movie, but I don't think the whole movie is like that. I don't think the whole movie is on that same tone.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any kind of life. But also, it's annoying, too, that the White Queen's alive the whole time and not doing anything.
Yeah.
Don't respond to this point. Let's get to my main point that I didn't even get to. There's no plot. Even though he said there's going to be a plot, like, what are the stakes here?
The fate of Wonderland.
No. What do you mean? The queen that doesn't want to reign still doesn't want to reign. So the only thing that happened is that the Red Queen got, like, ousted.
It doesn't matter. This was going to happen. It was more just making sure that the thing that was prophesied to happen happened.
I am just John in this. That's stupid.
Yeah.
I hate this.
That's Interstellar, baby.
I hate this movie. No, but at least Interstellar, like, was interesting. This is just, because at least there was a plot to Interstellar. Nothing happened here. Hey, you have to go to Wonderland to do a thing. And the thing doesn't make sense. The White Queen doesn't want her kingdom back because she's a pacifist that eats fingers, which doesn't make any sense. It's nonsense, and not fun nonsense. I love Alice in Wonderland, and this you, sir, are no Alice in Wonderland.
Well, I think that's the thing. I don't like Alice in Wonderland, so this is fine by me.
Well, yeah, because you have taste for shit, which is why you didn't think this movie was terrible.
No, I don't think it's great, but I think it's fine. I think it's like a C+.
You said before that this movie was the best you've ever seen. It's better than Godfather. I remember it. I'm quoting you directly.
That's okay. Fair enough. You got me there.
Remember before you were talking about...
There's no way to play that back.
When you're talking about...
back and find evidence.
No, here, I'll play it back right now. The Godfather is like a piece of shit compared to Alice in Wonderland. I really like I really like Iowa football. See? Dude, right there, played back.
I did say that. Yeah. God damn it.
All those words, exactly. It is a spot-on impression.
Wow, I have a lot to think about now.
I am proud of myself, though, that I didn't say duh that time, because I every time I do the duh thing, I feel really bad, because I'm like, you're not dumb, and you don't say duh, and it's just like this weird crutch I have.
Yeah, no, that's an easy one to do, I'll do that. Well, my thing now is, as I've done to you, is the whole, I dropped my floppy disks. That's hilarious.
But it's true. Yeah, voice, but it's true, though.
I'm still complaining about floppy disk.
Hey, look, I'm sorry I'm such a nerd licker.
but like, it is just that. Like, they're like, well, no, this is, we have this whole farmer's almanac, and this is supposed to happen now. So that's one of the reasons we came and got you. Like, I've been looking for different Alices. I found this Alice. So it's basically, the real story is their quest to get the idol in this location.
Yeah.
But that's not the story you're watching. You're watching the story of the idol being moved to this location.
Yeah, which is annoying. Hey, oh, John, by the way, I meant to ask you, why is a raven like a writing desk? I'm going to ask you six more times over the course of the film, by the way.
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe wrote on both.
Yeah, that's not the answer. There's no answer. That's the point that Lewis Carroll, that's why it's the fact. So another thing that I hate about this movie, and this is directly, this has nothing to do with, this is 100% the writing, is remembering a thing that happened earlier doesn't make it poignant. And the fucking raven like a writing desk thing of like, oh, I'm mad. How's a raven like a writing desk? Like, fuck you. But then also everything her dad said in the beginning, she remembers over the course of the movie as if it's some fucking poignant Yoda-like advice. Shut your dumb face. I believe in six impossible things before breakfast. Oh, cheerio. Hop up, full English breakfast. Fuck your face.
Which that, and we're skipping ahead again, but like for that moment to happen.
Let's just skip the whole movie. Let's talk about Mars Attacks again.
during the fight with the Jabberwocky, after you've already had the realization that, oh no, I am this Alice. What did that even do for you then? I think the whole last third of the movie is awful.
Yeah. The only thing I like about the last, not the fight, but kind of the third act, at least it had, no, you know what? I think it's just it paced a little bit quicker that I was glad it was ending. Like, I think it just was moving faster. And I was like, at least something's happening here. Instead of, hey, look, everything's like a fucking sepia picture or sepia. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah, I just, I think I take issue. The only visual stuff I really take issue with is the queen's head. I thought that's something that absolutely can work visually in a drawing or like in a model.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's off-putting. I know it's supposed to be, but it also just makes me think of those. Well, it makes me think of a couple things. Those fucking stupid, if you spent any time on Twitter and you shouldn't, but those stupid Photoshops of Trump people do where they put his head on videos and his head is always like nine times bigger than what's on the body.
Yeah.
But then it also makes me think of like particularly in the early to mid 2000s, you saw a lot of some business photography, like when things were going to be wacky or something, it was always an overhead shot fisheye lens of someone like shrugging and mugging to the camera. And I hate that aesthetic so much. And that's absolutely what this makes me think of. It's just like jib jab bullshit.
It looks really terrible. But on the other side, my absolute favorite thing in this, and I mean like not just favorite in like this is the thing I hated the least. I actually really loved the White Queen. The design of her is fucking gorgeous. And
yeah, I mean, that is a Tim Burton dream woman.
Anne Hathaway's choice of where she's holding her hands is, I am enamored with that as a character design. Her hand choice.
No, but her character is the quintessential Tim Burton female character.
Yeah, but that's it. So she's a good example of
she's
that.
She's just not played by Lisa Marie is the only difference.
But she's clean, black and white. Like, it's not, like, that's the Tim Burton, not sepia, burnt out, everything smells like campfire.
I think you're selling that part too hard because like the whole queen's the Red Queen's palace or the Queen of Hearts palace, very colorful, a lot of color in
it. No, Red Queen I'm fine with other than her dumb head. I'm there with you on it, but like that's the kind of, but it's more like the Tea Party stuff, the early Underland. That's the stuff that like, cause that's the table setting
there. You have all these beautiful colorful like mushrooms and flowers and stuff like that. I think you're
no
you're
no I'm not to, I'm not
like, I scenes with the entire movie.
I think you're confusing me talking about color with me talking about tone. I mean like there's no life to the movie. The way that he used to convey life was make it black and white, but then the people are colorful.
I would agree with you in that I don't think this movie has heart. I think that's I don't think that's that different. That's kind of why I bring this up to Mars Attacks. And while I do like. I don't think Mars Attacks is probably a better movie, but it is like Mars Attacks like had zero heart to it. Really, it just had
but it had humor at least. Where this movie, if it at least had some humor, it would offset some of the dreariness for me. But it didn't. It didn't even make an attempt at levity at all. Like it just.
I disagree. I think it went for some levity. I just don't think it was necessarily that funny.
Yeah, but I think I just missed it. This thing just did not grab me. But I thought the Queen's, other than, her head bothered the shit out of me. That feels Burton-y. And I thought that, like, kind of his aesthetic versus the content that used to exist in Burton just was lost here, except for just Anne Hathaway's. God, that just her hand choice is so good.
I liked pretty much all the creature design, with the exception of I didn't dig the Bandersnatch that much. But, like, again, that's a moment where, like, and this is true both of just, like, sort of a Tim Burton-y thing, but also the kind of weirdness of Alice in Wonderland. Whereas the Dormouse just like, I'm just going to stab you in the eye and pull it out. And that's just moving on. And I did like that. That kind of grossed me out. And I was not expecting that from a PG Disney movie.
Yeah. Hey, John, why is a raven like writing desk? Oh, no, sorry. Let's just keep going.
Because it can produce a few notes, though they are very flat, and it is never put with the wrong end in front.
I have thought about that like three times a year for the past 15 years. I don't understand that answer.
That's Lewis Carroll's actual answer, and it makes me very, like, the first part of it, because it can produce a few notes, though they're very flat. Fine. Like, that's a good enough answer you're going to get for that. But the whole, like, weird thing where it's like, it's never put with the wrong end in front, and I spelled never like Raven backwards. Well, it's like, okay, cool it, Chris Nolan.
To be fair, his first answer was, there's no answer. That's the entire point, you fucking assholes. Yeah. And then 20 years of idiots hounding him about it. He's like, fine, it's some fucking dumb shit. There's your fucking answer.
Yeah.
Which I like math. It's somewhat around where we are. Johnny Depp does the Jabberwocky poem recitation, which I'm not a huge fan of the way he did that. But I did like the writing here, and I don't know if it's Lewis Carroll or not, but I did like him describing her kind of losing her joie de vivre as saying, you used to be muchier. You've lost your much. I actually like that. I'm like, oh, that's a fun way to put things.
Well, that's the thing. That's actually when I thought of the Douglas Adams thing of like that. That is a specific kind of like British-y kind of humor that works, but people try to take it and turn it into something here, and it doesn't work as much.
That's the only one in this entire movie that I liked, but I like that kind of phraseology. And I think it actually works with the lead actress not having much kind of life to her of like the other characters commenting on it. You've kind of lost your well-castedness.
Yeah. And if that's supposed to be the point, it's like, that's been an argument I've heard about going back to Scott Pilgrim. Where it's like, the character's not having any depth is kind of supposed to be the point. I'm like, well, that's great. Why did I watch that? you could have just said that and I could have moved on with my life.
Yeah.
Spending 2 hours knowing that. And then that didn't, I don't know. There's a way to do that. And I don't think this did that very well or Scott Pilgrim did it very well. But I do think, because you're obviously revisiting all these things. And if you're familiar with Alice in Wonderland at all, you've seen all this shit before. So it's just kind of neat for me anyway. It was just kind of like, what's the spin on this? Oh, okay. Well, he did it that way. That's fine. That was enough to carry me through for a while. And because this thing is blissfully under 2 hours, it lasted for about an hour. And then once the hour mark hit, I think is when I was like, okay, I'm good now.
Yeah.
That's when the quote unquote plot really starts kicking in motion. And
I hated the beginning so much that once the plot started happening, I was actually kind of, I was relieved because at least something's happening because I don't like this. Oh, the other, I have very few positive notes on this, but the other thing I did like is in the Red Queen's palace. I like her palace kind of hangers on having fake big features made out of the plastic. That was actually fun. And I kind of was like annoyed because I just wanted to hate the thing like whole hog, except for being thirsty for Crispin Glover. I really like the fake nose and the one that he takes her fake bosom off, even though she's got like bosom underneath. It's just, it's a fun joke.
I had to rewind it to figure out what that reveal was.
Yeah.
Because I was very confused.
It's a fun joke. And I'm like, God damn it. Fine. I'll give you it. You're allowed to have one thing. Yeah.
But I will honestly say for as initially as annoyed as I was by her, I did like Helena Bonham Carter. I think she does a good job of portraying this, this petulant, awful queen, but like also this very hurt person.
I think she's acting wise. She's fine. I think it's the head thing really is hard to get.
It was a really bad choice.
And one good thing, and it's not a good thing, it's actually one lack of a bad thing I can say about the head is that I was somewhat expecting when we meet the White Queen later and turns out she's some kind of like necromancer sorcerer lady, that it was going to turn out that it was an accident that she made her sister's head grow big. And that's why she became a pacifist. All the points were leading that way. And I'm glad they didn't do that, because that's a really dumb idea, but it would fit so well into this turd.
I also like that technically the Queen of Hearts, she's right. This whole thing, she's right. She was like, I was first in line. She's Stannis Baratheon. She's like, I was the eldest, and they just passed over me. That kind of gets tossed aside, but I did enjoy that. That's why she's so pissed, because the White Queen was just like, oh, but I make everybody love me.
Yeah, but I mean, John, you're defending like monarchical reign of, you know, like line of succession.
So is this whole movie. I'm just saying, if you're going to follow the rules, follow
this
right.
Movie's saying that in the end, the better queen, and by better, I mean the weird Diane Ward necromancer lady, is the better queen. And democracy meaning that heroin model with the sword chose her. Oh, God, it's Monty Python.
Yeah, but it is like it was like at the very end when the her champion, the Jabberwocky, which I have a whole thing about that. But when that gets busted and all the card soldiers are like, we don't serve you no more. I was like, oh, cool. Workers rising up. And it's like, we serve this other lady.
Yeah.
That is just, that it has been decided she's better than us.
Yeah. We serve your sister who's 2 years younger, but that's our big, that's our act of rebellion. We're going to be ruled with an iron fist of someone slightly younger than the justified ruler.
Yeah. So the Jabberwocky was interesting because what year did that come out? There was a PC game, American McGee's Alice, that came out in 2000 that totally had this dark Alice in Wonderland thing. And at the time it came out, everyone was like, he was kind of ripped off like Tim Burton's whole aesthetic. And there was even a sequel that came out later, Alice Returns or something like that. But it was totally like, yeah, dark Alice in Wonderland. And one of the villains of it was the Jabberwocky. And the Jabberwocky in this looked like the Jabberwock from that game.
I think that's from the Lewis Carroll's illustration in the original version. Kind of looks like that.
And in fact, yes, because in fact, looking at it now, I'm wrong, because the Jabberwock in the game is a lot more sort of steampunk. But I was just enjoying that, like the Jabberwock as like a big villain was just sort of like these two things kind of like folding in on themselves of Alice. Tim Burton influencing this one guy, and this one guy influencing Tim Burton.
Oh, yeah.
But they are different enough, but I don't know why I thought that. Maybe I'm just going by the original Jabberwock thing, but I feel like I played a video game where I killed that guy. But I probably did. Maybe I'm thinking of Kingdom Hearts. Who knows?
Yeah, you might be thinking of chess. You ever play chess? Because that's a lot in this. I did, as much as I think it's clear that I'm not too fond of this movie, do like knowing that Christopher Lee was in yet another movie that made $1 billion. Like, it's just good for you, you fucking weirdo. I mean, that man literally consulted on the sound of a man's throat being slit because he knows what it sounds like from his time in the war. You were a beautiful gift to the universe, and the fact that he's in this piece of shit is actually kind of great.
And apparently, like, he wanted to do the Jabberwock voice more like gurgly and dragony, and Tim Burton was like, no, just be Christopher Lee. Which I like on the two fronts of Christopher Lee has just an impressive, awesome voice. But Tim Burton being like, look, man, I don't want to try. Just don't make it hard. Just do this.
Yeah, I mean, that actually kind of annoys me a little bit, because it's like, so Tim Burton, you know, Tim Burton, the guy that made the Planet of the Apes remake, you're telling Christopher Lee's acting instinct to go, yeah, okay, that's a fucking good idea.
He's the director.
Also, all of the voices in this movie, they did them all in a day. So you could, like, Tim Burton did not give a fuck about this movie.
Well, so much of it was green screened. Danny Elfman apparently scored it using just green screen footage, which is fine because Danny Elfman just went, I'm just going to do the same thing I always do.
Yeah.
But there is, like, I can't even imagine as an actor dealing with that. Like, how just draining that's got to be. Because you're like, oh, no, I studied all these, you know, pretty much like these huge trained actors that are like, I studied all this method and I went to Juilliard or all this stuff, whatever, and I'm used to dealing with other human beings. No, I got to do this all. I got to emote to a tennis ball.
One of the things I liked, I don't know if we've talked about it too much, but whatever, we won't get into it. But Rogue One, a Star Wars story, the robot in that played by Alan Tudyk, Alan was actually on set in a green screen, a green costume with like some arm and lengthening devices or whatever. So he like filled up the same space as K2SO, the robot. So the actress had something to act against. And I think that's why that character is so much more lifelike than anything in the Star Wars prequels, because that was a fucking tennis ball on a stick. And it doesn't matter how good of an actor you are. You can't act against a fucking tennis ball on a stick. It's
like that was Scorsese's big thing with the Irishman. Cause that was something that like he had talked about for a while, but he's like, I can't do the de-aging thing where like my actors are talking to each other and one guy has ping pong balls over his face. You can't see past that as an actor. Like that's going to take you out of the moment or whatever. And then, so they found out a way to do it. And I think, if you can make that happen, that's got to be so much better. And I do think that some of the lifelessness perhaps you see from Alice in this is that, you know, who's she talking to in most of this? Nobody.
And also, and the voices of nobody are basically a subtle differentiation of the same voice.
Yeah. It's just different Teamsters off in the corner just reading lines off a script, like those guys on David Letterman.
Yeah, and anyway, the band of Snatchy went kafluka, whatever the fuck. I don't know. It's your line, lady.
Yeah, but...
That's my patented Teamster voice.
That was good.
Yeah, thank you. I very much appreciate it.
The one thing at the end as well. So there's a through line where there's some sort of dance.
Oh, yeah, the flutter the wagon Hatter, or something?
Yeah. The Mad Hatter used to do, and he's like, I'll only do it once the Jabberwock's defeated and we have the world back. And it ends with him doing the dance.
Yeah.
I can't help but feel like I want to give Tim Burton the benefit of the doubt here that this was some studio intervention of like, no, make it funky. Because that music drop like belongs nowhere in this movie compared to anything else. And like, it seemed like if you played some weird, like creepy Calliope music or something, it would fit so much better. But all of a sudden it's like, it breaks into this funky beat.
Yeah. Like Tim Burton dance music should be like, played on like a concertina on a haunted sailboat. That's Tim Burton. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But that was weird. There's also another music drop that we're going to get to after we finish it. And the dance is so CGI I hope that's a studio note. Cause I can't, or, you know, it's a writer's room note and Tim Burton had nothing to do with the writing. I don't know how much writing credit he had on it.
I do wish this was older Tim Burton in the sense that he did it all practical. But, you know, maybe it's one of those things where he found this stuff and really, really liked it. It's like, Robert Rodriguez, who that first El Mariachi was just this amazing.
Oh, yeah.
He made this for nothing. And it was so much fun. And then he went like, no, I love CGing everything. And it became one of the most boring filmmakers alive.
Yeah. I think one of the things I really hate about this is that I think Tim Burton would have made a really cool Alice in Wonderland movie if he made it in 1984, 1987, you know, like whenever the exact moment that he still made movies that looked like Tim Burton and felt like Tim Burton, more importantly, and had enough clout to have a budget. I think we missed out on like a cool interpretation.
Yeah.
I don't really think you need another fucking Alice in Wonderland. Like, I'm not a big fan of that animated one from the 60s or whatever, but that's a perfect interpretation of the book.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah,
Just leave it. Like, I know we're leaving money on the table here, kids, but like, just leave it. It's fine.
Yeah, and I completely forgot, like, about halfway through I realized, oh yeah, this was a 3D thing. This was when 3D was making its big comeback.
Yeah.
And there's certain moments where you're like, oh yeah, that was supposed to be this big 3D wow thing. You'd have to get answers from him about why he apparently said like, oh, I think 3D's, you know, just a great choice for this. But that also just seems like, hey, Tim, tell him 3D's a great choice for this.
Yeah. So we're kind of like at the end of the film. Here's an interesting thing. To get home from Wonderland, which she's already done once, but to get home this time, she has to drink the blood of her decapitated enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Because,
I mean, you've established in this universe, she's already been here once and got home. So she didn't drink the blood of her decapitated enemy that time.
How did she even get home the first time? I don't even remember.
I don't remember. I don't think it.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't drink blood.
She definitely didn't decapitate the last of its species and then drink its blood. That I'm sure I would remember that part.
That's okay. That one needs to die out.
So they're giving their goodbyes. What Johnny or the Mad Hatter says to her, Farfarin, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
What? I don't know what Farfarin is.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. Something. It's Hatter talk.
Is it? Because most other Hatter talk, I could understand because they're like words. Wait, I'm going to look it up. Farin. Sure, that's how you spell it. Alice. Oh, wait, okay, we have a clip. Okay. What does farfarin mean? Oh, it means fair faring in Scottish, or good journeying.
Go. Yeah, see, because he became Shrek for some reason.
Yeah, that was... I mean, yeah, again, in a better movie, in a more upbeat movie, I actually don't mind that choice. Because, I mean, he tried so hard in this. Like, bless his little heart. I like Johnny... I don't like the character of this, but I like what Johnny Depp did. He tried. He tried his darndest.
Yeah, I think, you know, now that you're mentioning it, I think about people trying their darndest. I think so much of this sort of lack of life thing comes from that actress not really doing anything.
Yeah.
And not to just try to blame it all on the pretty people, but like, you're talking about the Kuleshov effect thing. Like, she doesn't react to anything. She's like, all right, well, this is happening now. But
And again, I don't blame her as an actress. She was the wrong choice for this role. There's no other way around it. And you can tell Tim Burton didn't give a shit. That's why he didn't bother with voice actors, casting. Right. It just, he didn't care. And it came out like that. She gets back to England and then she just kind of starts doing like Jeffrey Ross roasts of the people at her wedding.
Yeah. Or at the engagement party. Yeah.
Yeah.
She turns society upside down.
Yeah. And then she
becomes the Joker.
Yeah, because she's like, hey, Aunt Petunia, there's no prince. No one's ever going to love you. It's like, what a fucking shitty thing to say. This woman has mental health issues. Like, why are you bringing, like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Like, that wasn't kind or whatever. Like, the other stuff I can get where it's like, you suck, you know, you're leave that one alone.
Yeah, you two ladies, you're like Tweedledum, Tweedledummer. Hey, Grey Gardens, no one gives a shit about you and you smell like cats. What the fuck?
Or even if it was just, you don't need a prince. Something like more positive. It's bullshit of whatever. But yeah, she's just like, hey, dummy, quit being crazy.
Yeah, oh, God. And then she becomes the apprentice on a ship and, starts opium wars. Yeah,
so she leaves the guy that wants to betray her, like runs away. But then... somehow is talking to his dad.
And who was her father's business partner, I think.
Like, you just wanted to go to Jakarta. What if we went all the way up to Japan? And he's like, no one, or to China. And he's like, no one ever thought of ever going to China, the giant landmass right there. You're a genius. What a girl boss. Yes, queen. Get on my ship. Let's be business partners.
Yep. And then they go. Yes,
so she becomes an opium dealer.
So much like Alice, where she quoted her father at the end of the movie, what he said at the beginning, and because that's supposed to make it have emotional impact, which is actually just hacky shit writing. John, I'm going to close our episode on Alice in Wonderland with a recitation. Trippin' out, spinning around, I'm underground, I fell down. Yeah, I fell down, I'm freaking out. So where am I now? Upside down. And I can't stop it now. It can't stop me now. I'll get by. I'll survive when the world's crashing down. When I fall and hit the ground, blah, 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 blah. I found myself in Wonderland. That is the closing lyrics.
Maya Angelou still got it.
Yes, that is the closing lyrics to the Avril Lavigne song that ends this movie. That's right, an Avril Lavigne song ends a Tim Burton movie. And it starts out with the lyrics.
Ends a Disney movie.
Tripping out, spinning around.
Let's not kid ourselves about who. Yes, it's a Tim Burton movie, but it's a Disney movie.
I'm embarrassed for Danny Elfman. That one, he's involved in this. I get he cashed a paycheck, but like he's got to have money at this point. That he wants to work with his friend Tim Burton again, and it's this thing, and then he doesn't even get the end titles, and then insult injury, it's this garbage pile song with lyrics spinning around. Ugh.
I got done watching the movie, and then I hit pause, like, oh, this ending song is terrible, and I hit pause, and I was doing something else, some actual work stuff, and then, like, I had to restart my computer or something, and just, like, the music started playing, and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And I'm like, this is the worst song I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it took me forever to figure out that it was, the movie's still playing.
Yeah. And it's not good. Last thoughts on Alice in Wonderland. Anything else?
Mostly forgotten it. It just kind of passed right through me. It was, maybe my expectations were so low going into it, but like it was like a C+. It was fine. It was there.
And
I didn't find anything that offensive about it.
I will let this noise speak for me. That was me hitting delete on my Evernote for my notes on this, which I usually keep for afterwards. But fuck this movie. I'm never thinking about it again, although I sort of want to see the sequel. Okay.
Oh, there's a sequel. That's right.
Yes, Through the Looking Glass. And I don't even think Tim Burton even directed it.
Yeah, I am not watching that. It's like there's that Maleficent sequel. Like, why would you do that?
Tim Burton, we're trying to figure out what went wrong with him or what went right. And I think I have my final thoughts prepared, and it's quick. QT, Quentin Tarantino. He's the one that I know said it, but a lot of other people said it, that filmmakers only have a certain number of films in them. And then afterwards, they're, you know, essentially they have nothing left to say. And I don't know that I agree 100% with this statement, because I think there's ways that you can reinvent yourself, that you can do different genre stuff. You can try to figure out a way to be creative as your creative impetus kind of winds down from that first thrust of, I want to be a filmmaker. I want to make movies. And I think Tim Burton never got that second wave. And he had his first run was amazing, and I will love him forever. But I think even when he kind of has decent movies after the kind of the wave crested, it's more just like almost like a cover act, and there's nothing left. He has nothing left to say as an artist. And although he has skills, and they look great, I just don't think he's got. There's much left to him, you know. This is the melancholy death of Oyster Boy, and this time Oyster Boy is Tim Burton.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree to a point. Like, I think he, like Wes Anderson, is like, okay, here's my style. I know it's been copied a billion times by other people, some lesser, whatever, but I'm still just going to do it. But that style, the technology has grown with him. So being this like visual craziness, like we get that for nothing now. There's movies about fucking troll dolls that have this shit. And so what his stuff is less impressive. It doesn't stand out as much. And he hasn't evolved with that. And I think also he's rested on his laurels a bunch. And he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to make the same kind of shit. And like, maybe it's fun for me. Maybe, you know, maybe he's having a good time doing it, but like, he's not growing or changing or anything. And in some ways that's fine. You know, you have a look and you stick with it, but in some ways it just feels like you're just like, ah, this is good enough. Like,
yeah.
This is working for me. Like, I'm still going to tour doing the same four jokes that I did in 1988, because that's what people remember me for.
Yeah. It's like those, like classic rock artists that just keep making the same album over and over again, where it's like, my fans will watch it. My fans will listen to it. And, you know, maybe I'll pick up a few new ones, cause they have, you know, they like kind of boredom rock.
Just by taking care of business. That's it.
Yeah. Kind of hurts me to say, cause I think the depth of talent that we have in Tim Burton, I think we're kind of missing out as, you know, it's whatever, you know, this is a bigger topic to talk about, but like what an artist owes the world. And I think as consumers of art, I think in a different and better universe, we could have had 10 more mind blowing, amazing films from him. If he stayed hungry, or if, you know, whatever those kind of sliding doors, one small thing changes the universe stuff happened, I think he would still be, because I mean, the man's a great artist. He's a good director. You know, I think we could have had a lot more.
I think a couple of things happened that may have led to this is that, well, I'll use this use this little anecdote as a springboard to get to that. But like, there's apparently a movie, it might just be called like Talks with Vincent or something like that, but it's this unreleased Tim Burton movie where it's just like his conversations with Vincent Price on the set of Edward Scissorhands and other things like that. And it never saw the light of day because when it was all said and done, Tim Burton was like, this is way too personal and I don't feel like getting this out there. And I would love to see it, because like, if nothing else, just cause I do love, you know, both these people in their primes. Well, Vincent Price, his prime was a long time, but, just that, like that thing of a guy, of someone like basically talking to their hero and just watching that interplay sounds fascinating to me. But he was like, no, that's way too personal. And I think he tried to tell that story a little bit in Ed Wood, which I think is a fantastic movie. And audiences went, nah, no thanks. And it didn't make a dime. Like, critics liked it, but it didn't make a dime. It bombed pretty good. And then, you know, then he's like, well, I'm just going to be this weird thing now. Do Mars have people like, nah, no thanks. And then I don't even think, did Big Fish even do that well? Because that was the last movie, as much as I disagree with the, I don't like the emotion of it. It didn't connect with me. It did at least attempt to have a heart. But trying to see how much it.
To me, that's the last. I mean, that one I think made money because it was lower budget, but I know it was critically well received.
It was pretty well received, earning $13.181 million its opening weekend. It grossed $66.8 million. Yes. I mean, I think it did fine, but maybe just not as good as.
Well, 66. So it was probably made for 25 or 30. So it's or maybe 40. But either way, I think it made money.
But I'm really curious to see Big Eyes, which kind of like just disappeared, kind of came and went. So maybe it's not that good. But it's a story that's not an adaptation, which he's kind of just only does now. And
well,
and,
it's a biopic. So I mean, it sort of is an adaptation. It's an adaptation of real life.
So, I mean, so like Pee Wee's Big Adventure was adapted from Paul, from his, you know, stand-up act, like that whole character. So, I mean, like, yes, it's an adaptation, but it's not a pre-existing work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is like back to his whole like weird outcast that doesn't really expand more than just being a weird outcast. And maybe he's also a victim of his own success in terms of like, he's not the weird outcast anymore.
Yeah.
That his weird visual style has been adopted by so many other things that like I said, like his, like, let's make something look crazy and amazing. That's like the way movies look now, not necessarily with his style, but, you know, colorful and flashy and, so being just that, like visually standing out, is usually not as much anymore. You need more than that, for me anyway.
Yeah, I think his early stuff had more than that because he still had like that kind of, I don't know, there was kind of emotional or heart to it that went away, and it went like as he got more popular, it became just more about the style than the substance. And I think it's one of those. I mean, that happens with a shitload of artists. I mean, this is not a strange thing, but like it's also like he managed to get into like a really long term relationship, which that's a terrible thing for an artist. If you want to stop making good art, is be happy. That's a great way to stop making fucking quality stuff. It's a little frustrating because there's a lot of what could have been, but I mean, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, he's, you know, in a long-term relationship with Helen Hunter Carter and lived in, like, wealthy houses that had a fucking tunnel connecting them. I could think of worse lives. Like, I mean, good for you, Mr. Burton. Like,
lose touch with your artistic drive and, you know what I mean, or the...
Yeah, I mean, I traded a fucking second.
Oh, sure, yeah. I'm not... I mean, my artistic drive is this movie, is getting on this show and yelling about... listening to you yell about teeth.
All right, so Tim Burton, I think we did it. I think we covered everything, except for we missed a bunch of it.
Stop talking about him for a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we did four movies. I think at some point we have to shut up about this asshole.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with it. All right. But I do still want to see Big Eyes.
Yeah, I mean, there's
if
a bunch.
If anyone's seen it, let me know how it is.
Yeah, and also, you know, it would have been nice to talk about Ed Wood. Maybe we'll do that in a couple of years. I'm real fucking tired of talking about Tim Burton at this point.
Yeah, I don't think, let's do something else.
Yeah. Well, John, now that we've put the old Tim Burton to bed... I think we need to move on to something I like to call an awkward segue into saying that we're going to do Wonder Woman next.
Woo!
That's what the guitar sounds like when she shows on screen.
I think this is the one... At this point, this might be the one like dark DC movie that I haven't seen yet. I feel like I've seen the other ones now, which saying that out loud makes me very depressed.
Yeah, it is. Considering you've missed a lot of the Marvel ones, which are like... Although not high art, far more capable than the DC ones.
Yeah, but I feel like you're just telling me that, like, I didn't order the number 3 at McDonald's, and I'm missing out because I ordered the number 2 and the number 4.
Yeah, what I'm saying is you've eaten Domino's a whole bunch, and then... But you could have ordered the okay local pizza, where it's a lot better than Domino's. It's also, you know... Not very good. You could have just ordered the good local pizza.
No, but Domino's is gritty.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Gritty. Yeah. Dark reboot of the Noid. So Wonder Woman starring Gal Gadot. It's also got a Harry Potter guy in it. So, you know, I'm gonna like it. David Thewlis is in it. So, Chris Kirk. And it's a movie. So we're going to watch that. And we'll meet back here and report back to you.
Woo!
Okay, bye.
Bye, everybody.